We're continuing today with the book of Acts. I'm sorry, the book of Revelations, Revelation chapter 4. And we read last Sabbath, we went over verses 1 through 5 last Sabbath, and we will continue from verse 5 today. Last Sabbath, we looked at, let me turn there. Let me just grab my Bible so I can see. Okay, yes, so we looked at in that chapter, and we talked about and what John saw in verse.
Slightly fading, bro.
Yes, sorry about that. We went over what John saw in those verses. And in verse 3, we read that, and he who sat there had the appearance of a jasper and a carnelian. And around the throne was a rainbow that had the appearance of an emerald. So this is the, what he saw there was not the sun, as you would actually see. And if you notice, there's not much description. When we read about the description of Yeshua in the prior chapters, you know, we were told what his eyes were like, what his hair was like, and so on. Here, you're only given the appearance. There's an appearance, but it doesn't seem like he saw something very definitive. He saw the colors. He that sat on was the appearance of jasper. And last Sabbath, we mentioned about the color of jasper. And I mentioned one of the colors I saw was a reddish color, but jasper really comes in many colors. I looked it over, but jasper is usually multicolored. So it could be greenish with yellow or red stripes or blue or green. It might, sometimes it has a sandy color. But John tells us it had the appearance of carnelian also. So if I remember, carnelian might be a reddish stone also. So even though jasper can be any of several colors, but because he said the appearance of jasper and carnelian, and I'm not fast enough on the computer to show you a picture of carnelian, but if I looked up the right stone, it is also red, reddish in appearance. But there's a rainbow around the throne, which was emerald, which is, as I said, is a greenish color. And around were 24 thrones. And I'm not going to speculate on that. As we read more closely going forward, we might get better insights. But I'm not going to waste your time guessing what this is, because I'm reading it along with you. There was the one seated on the throne. There were the 24 elders, 24 thrones with 24 elders clothed in white garments. And we know throughout the scriptures, white garments is the spiritual body, basically. Their righteousness and their spiritual body. It's both. And crown and golden crowns on their head. So they were beings of authority. Whatever they are, they represented authorities in the heaven under that Elohim, under Elohim. And before the throne, there was, as it were, a sea of glass like crystal. And we won't turn there, but as you see in Ezekiel and other places, and I believe, if I'm correct, even in possibly, well, I'll stick with Ezekiel, but there are other accounts also, it's usually the same thing. A throne and under is like an expanse, like a sea of glass, like crystal. So as I said, in the ancient, in the older writings, these descriptions are always there when describing what the presence setting in the heavens is like, that people are seeing. See Elohim in that way. And verse 6, let's continue. Oh, forgot. Verse 5. And there were burning seven torches of fire, which are the seven spirits of Elohim. And again, these are not seven spirits like he has the Holy Spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh, as if this is another set of spirits. No, the Ruach HaKodesh is from Elohim and his Son, from the Father and the Son. These spirits are created beings. And the other books, as I've mentioned, such as the Book of Enoch, and I know not all of us subscribe to Enoch, but when the writer wrote this, the people who were reading of that time, who would have had, who had access or to the Book of Enoch, would have known what these seven spirits are. And as I've mentioned last Sabbath, they represent the seven angels that are closest to Elohim. They're the most holy angels, elect angels who are closest to Elohim, of which are Michael and Gabriel. I don't remember the rest of their names on the top of my head. But four of them, including Michael and Gabriel, are the closest among the seven. So that's what's going on here. And verse 6. And before the throne there was, as it were, a sea of glass like crystal, like the expanse. Okay, we said that. And around the throne, on each side of the throne, are four living creatures full of eyes in front and behind. The first living creature like a lion, and the second like an ox. The third had the face of a man, and the fourth like an eagle. And the four living creatures, each of them had six wings, each of them with six wings full of eyes all around and within. And day and night they never cease to say, "Holy, holy, holy is the eternal Elohim Almighty, the El Shaddai, who was and is to come." Okay, so I'm not going to spend too much time on this, because as we read forward, the sense of it will make more sense. So in chapters 1, 2, and 3, John was being shown the things that were going to happen to these seven congregations. And now, after this, he was, as said in verse 1 of chapter 4, he was shown what's happening in the heavens now. So the background is set up for him. The heavenly context is set up for him, and we're given insight as to what he saw. So he sees these four living creatures. And around the throne, on each side of the throne, they were there. And the verse 4, and the four living creatures, we read that, had six wings, and they're crying, "Holy, holy, holy is the eternal Almighty who was and is to come." It's actually the sovereign Almighty who was and is to come. And as I've pointed out in the past, and we'll continue to do this, because there are more accounts of this, where it says who was and is to come, that's a reference to the sacred name. That's a reference to the Yud He Vav He, the YHWH, as we see it in our English text. That's the reference to his name. So his full titles are represented here. Adonai, he's the sovereign. He is Elohim, he is El Shaddai, and the sacred name, who was and is to come. Yud He Vav He, who was and is to come. That's what's being referenced here. Now, a little bit about holiness. Because I had the word Kadosh, and this will help us hopefully a little bit. The word Kadosh, sometimes we think just because something is said in Hebrew, somehow that makes it a good thing. No, not necessarily. And if need be, I'll do a better teaching, a more extensive. But the word holy is not always a good word. The word kadosh is not always a good word, right? Sometimes it's referred to ladies of the night. Okay, it's in the scriptures. I won't go there simply because that's not the emphasis, but I want us to understand what makes a word important is if it's associated with Elohim. So the word Kadosh is only important when it's connected with Elohim. It's not important in of itself. And people go out of their way to, you know, change words from this word to just to make a word Hebrew. No, the word Kadosh is not a sanctified word. It's only sanctified when applied to Elohim. Okay, we have to understand that about the language, so we don't go off the tangent trying to change everything to Hebrew. Changing it to Hebrew doesn't make it better. It really doesn't. When Yeshua was being condemned and accused and blasphemed, he was being blasphemed in Hebrew. When he was talked against, jeered at, all that was being done by Hebrew, as well as, I'm sure, in the Roman language too, when he was being beaten by the soldiers. But we shouldn't think that Hebrew in of itself, it's Elohim that makes things holy. And when defiled people are using things, it becomes defiled. And that's why the temple, which was holy, became defiled and was destroyed. That's why he said the Sabbaths and your prayers and your incense, all these things were designated by him as holy, but because they were defiled, in Isaiah, he says, I don't want them anymore. Take them away. I don't want to hear your prayers. I don't want your incense. Right? So we have to, it's Elohim that, it is when things are used in context of Elohim that they are important. And if, so keep it how we think, don't get caught up in language. That's one of the lessons in, again, Acts chapter 2, when the Holy Spirit came. These were all Hebrew men from all over the world. Elohim, if he wanted to make a statement about Hebrew for the new covenant, then he would have spoken to them in Hebrew. But he purposely, because all of them understood Hebrew, there were Jews coming to Jerusalem to worship. But he spoke to them in their own tongue. And the book of Enoch, and those of you who not familiar, says the same thing, that they are to write these accounts in their own language, then they will know. Even the sacred name. If you say the sacred name and you don't say it, what it means, it means nothing to you. It'll mean nothing. You will understand the sacred name when you can say it in your own language, when you know what it means. That's what's important. So verse 9. Whenever the living creatures give glory and honor and thanks to him who is seated on the throne, who lives forever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before him who is seated on the throne and worship him who lives forever and ever. They cast their crowns before the throne saying, Worthy are you, our sovereign and Elohim, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they exist and were created. So here's the greatness. And do you see the reflection of where the Spirit is? What did the disciples said when we just finished the book of Acts earlier? What was in the disciples' prayer? Wasn't it that same acknowledgement? What did they say in their prayer? I'll read it to you again. In the book of Acts, we read, in Acts chapter 4, we read, verse 24 says, and when they heard it, they lifted their voices together to Elohim and said, Sovereign, eternal, who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and everything in them. You see how they address the eternal? And that's how he is being praised here. Worthy are you, our sovereign and Elohim, our eternal, to receive glory and honor and power. Why? For you created all things, and by your will they exist They existed and were created. So we have to so that's implying understanding. We have to understand Elohim. We can't understand him, his infinite in that regard. But everything he reveals of himself, he does not reveal it in vain. He reveals it to be understood. And he has revealed himself to us as the eternal, as Elohim, as the one who created all things. So when we speak to him, to the non-believers, we must make sure we speak in that context. It's the meaning behind information that will make sense. If you have information, tons of data, and it's not processed and no one can understand what it says, it's pointless. But if we can make, by the Spirit, people see, you are actually speaking about the Creator of heaven and earth. It does something else. It has a greater impact when people can finally grasp what it is we're talking about. We're not talking about some God. I say that on purpose. We're not speaking about some personage in an old relic book. We're speaking about the Creator of heaven and earth. That is apart from any book. The books are about him, but he existed forever before these books. So we have to connect with the Elohim that exists apart from law. That's what Paul is trying to say. It's I'm referring to when Paul says we're saved apart from law. It is because the will of Elohim is beyond what any book can hold. And we must have a true relationship with him apart from the book. Digest that. I am not saying that we should, far from it, that we should reject the scripture. No, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying we need to develop a relationship with our Creator. That's what the book is telling us to do. But sometimes, unfortunately, we form a relationship with the book more than we do with Elohim. And when the pressures come, the book will not help because it's just book knowledge. We have to have experimental knowledge gained from experience. And that comes from calling out to him and him answering. That's right. Have you ever heard Elohim? Have you ever prayed and Elohim answered you? Great. You know what that's like. But if you haven't, you can. And that comes through prayer. That's where prayer comes in, prayer and meditation. Earnestly speaking with him with expectation. It's not just about reading and studying words and oh my goodness, how does the blind and the deaf become saved then? If it's a matter of words. No, it's a matter of a spirit crying out to Elohim with as little or as much as you know. It's not how much you know. It's the quality of what you do with what you know. It's the quality of your relationship with Elohim and presenting him properly before people so that people can, I know who you're talking about now. You're not just talking about something written in a book. You're actually talking about the being in which we live, the being who created us, the being who is from everlasting to everlasting. That's who you're talking about. We must pray to Elohim. So I'll stop here and we will continue next Sabbath. So just a quick recap. So again, chapter 4 is an introduction to the new information that John was about that John received. Before he received any information, he was given a solid heavenly foundation. He saw things. He saw the one seated on the throne. He saw an appearance of him. He got a sense of the awesome power that was before him. Energies activated, a rainbow, lightning, fire, and thunder. He saw seven heavenly beings before his throne. He saw the 24 elders. He heard their praise. praise of the Creator. So that's what basically chapter 4 is about. It's the now he's about to receive more information. So next Sabbath we will start to see and analyze some of the information that John is about to receive for the congregations. Again, remember, everything that John is writing down is on behalf of the congregations. Of course he benefits from it, of course, but it's specifically on behalf of those seven congregations who were about to be impacted severely, who were already being impacted. They were in the day of tribulation. Let's read that again. It's important we keep that context in mind as we're reading this. Otherwise, we'll get lost in time. We don't want to get lost in time. John says in chapter 1 of Revelation, verse 9 through 10, he says, I, John, your brother and partner in the tribulation. You know what I said? In the tribulation and the kingdom and the patient endurance that are in Yeshua. So they were in the tribulation already at that time. That's why he says it was in verse 10, I was in the spirit on the Lord's, the sovereign's day. And I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet. This was the time of the tribulation had already come upon them, just as Messiah Yeshua had said, when Jerusalem was going to be in great distress. And so all this information is being delivered to these seven congregations who are experiencing the trouble, and so they can know what to do to stand firm and to be received into glory by Elohim, and they can know what's going to happen in their distant future, so that we can know what's going to happen, what happened in the past, and what's going to be in our future. So that's what we're studying, so we can know what to expect. So thank you again, dear brethren. I turn this back over to Brother Felix.